Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. High energy start to the.
I don't know if we can keep up with that for the rest of the episode, though.
Episode? Is this an episodic event?
Yeah, I tend to think so. It is proof that our listeners are not taking all of their medication as the episodes have started again.
Okay, well, that may be. And one of our clients yesterday told me we were too silly.
And this client is just now realizing this?
No, he said he's figured that out over a long time.
At least that they have some degree of perception.
That's good. I'm glad they've figured this out. Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. It is, in case you haven't figured out from the fact that our voices are coming out of your radio or something similar to a radio. It could be like a computer or an iPod or an iPad. I don't know if an iPod will do it, but an iPhone would do it, and so would a Galaxy. We could be speaking through people's galaxies right now.
Yes. Well, what he's saying is that we are a radio program.
Yes, we're a radio program.
We have a firm grasp on
the
audience.
And we also have a firm. Yes. And outside of being the mysterious voices who emerge from a device which you hopefully possess, we also spend our weekdays, our day job, if you will, laboring with the management of people's investment portfolios in a little building, or actually a pretty big building in some ways, in Salado, Texas. Because of the size of the portfolios we manage, we have been forced to register with the Securities and Exchange Commission as investment advisors.
Nobody forced us to. We could have decided
to
stop managing people's money.
If we were going to manage that much money and we were going to get paid for it.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the tax system. It's a completely voluntary system. You don't have to pay taxes if you don't make any money.
Hey, look, well, the other thing is you don't have to pay taxes, and if you don't pay taxes, they reward you.
Right, yeah.
They give you time.
Unless you don't make any money. And then they just give you a return on your taxes that you didn't pay.
Well, actually, you have to have kids to do that, I think, don't you? Earned income credit, I think you get.
That's just one of the credits. There's other credits.
So I could just, because I no longer have any dependent children, I could just stop making any money at all and the government would pay me?
If you did it right, yeah.
How do you not work doing it right?
Well, that's the conundrum there. I think there are a lot of people experimenting with that across the United States.
Mm.
How do I not work and do it right?
I've noticed some people doing that down in Austin who behave oddly while they're doing it. So I don't think it's a particularly rational approach.
Well, you're talking about the people that tend to wander around having conversations with strange individuals on the street? That's us. Oh, no.
Right.
You mean the homeless people.
We are the strange individuals, yes.
That have conversations.
Now, let's not talk about our clients like that, okay?
Now, this does bring us to a point, and I didn't even intend to do it. It's just it's like death and taxes. Taxes are the center of a lot of people's thoughts at the moment. For some reason, at this time of year, people tend to start thinking about taxes.
Why?
But I could be coincidence. I think it has to do with spring. Maybe it's spring. Easter season. I don't know. But what I was saying is that, and I keep running into this.
You actually forgot what you were saying, I think.
I keep running into this situation. Our tax code is so problematic.
That's why it's called a code. You can't break
it. It is a code. It is completely.
It's a cipher.
If we had used, during World War II, if we had just used the tax code, the Nazis would never have been able to figure out what we were talking about. If all of our militaries had used the tax code, the Nazis would not have been able to figure us out, but then neither would we. We wouldn't have known what we were doing.
We still don't.
We still don't know what we're
right.
doing. And this, I'm going to give you an example. There's some kind of two big waves coming together into a bigger wave here. People talk about the student loan problem that we have in the United States. There's mm-hmm. this massive amount of student loans. It's now larger, the amount of student loans that we have as a country is now larger than the amount of credit card debt we have as a country.
Right.
And that's a pretty big deal. And some people, when they get out of college, they are looking at 30 years out before they're out of debt. for the college that was supposed to pay for their next 30 years.
Right.
And then with the recession, people are, you know, there's a lot of problems here. Well, I have some personal experience with this, but I'm going to use an example of someone else's personal experience. Two very high-end educated people, one of them a teacher, one of them a financial world type person, both of them doing well in their fields. They got married fairly young being in their late 20s.
Really?
Yeah. So they're married. And
that's good if they're going to be together. Yeah, I mean,
they start putting together their taxes because this is the first year that they have to file taxes together. And they go, oh, wow. If we file our taxes jointly, the student loans for the lady who's the teacher who has the low income are going to triple. They're $500 a month now. They will be $1,500 a month. They look at that and they go, we can't afford that. The reason why the student loans would be tripling is because it's income-based and with a second income in the family.
It's the loan doesn't triple, the payment triples.
The payment triples.
Right.
But they can't afford that.
Wait a minute. Haven't you heard the advertisements? If you're a teacher, you can get rid of your student
loans.
It's
a little bit difficult to do. This is not an easy task. It's something it happens over a long period of time. It isn't something that happens overnight. Anyway, they've decided, okay, what we'll do is we're married. We have to file married because we're married now. The tax code says if you are married, you must file as married. Now, you have the choice of filing head of household or you've got, you can't do that. You're married. Okay. So you can do joint or separate. If they file separately, neither of them can contribute to their Roth IRAs anymore because they make more than $10,000 apiece. Wow. Yes, you're having the same reaction that they did. And they said, this doesn't make any sense. Why is this? Well, because our tax code is not designed very well. It isn't supposed to be fair because it's not supposed to be anything. This is it's a conglomeration of hundreds of laws, none of which were looking at the other laws and the impact that the next new law will have on the other laws.
Right.
So the Roth, which is a wonderful contribution tool for people in their young ages, newly married, not extremely high income,
right,
they can't use it. And this is, we get so wrapped up in governmental scandals over, you know, the sequester, or we're talking about budget cuts for the military, or whose pension is going where. There is this massive question out there that has not been asked in several years. And it's one that I think is the most important question to be asked by our Congress, and that is, why is our tax code so incredibly complex?
I think that I just, by the way, for whatever it's worth, just got through reading an article on that, and there is a consensus on both sides of the aisle in Congress that the tax code needs a complete overhaul to be rational. The problem is
that consensus has existed for over a decade.
Well, the problem is that in the article said that the Republicans are absolutely against, even though they're completely for overhauling it, they were completely against overhauling it while there's a Democrat in office.
Right.
And the Democrats are completely convinced that it needs to be overhauled, but they don't want it overhauled at any point while there is a Republican in office. So
yes,
unless one party or the other.
What we need is a Green Party candidate as president, and then we can overhaul the tax system.
No, actually, neither of them want the tax code overhaul
unless they could get credit for it.
Their party has control of the overhaul.
Right. So what I'm looking at here.
And that means they have to have the president and a majority in both houses.
Right. This is a great example of one of the many scandals that people get all upset about, completely blind to some other aspects of it. The NSA, This has come out, the right. Snowden leaks. The people are all upset about this. I'm not happy with it. Nobody should be happy with it. There's so much stuff out there that the government doesn't necessarily need to know, that they know about, and what are they looking at, and all of that. And people have been spending uncounted hours on late-night talk shows and on news stations talking about the scandals of what the government knows. And there's a little voice in the back of my head that I usually tell to shut up, but I'm going to allow to speak. And that little voice is the one that I'm watching these things, if I watch them, and I've stopped watching them, that says, what about the IRS?
You know, that's
the IRS knows everything.
You got it. I this whole issue today, I noticed that there was a thing popped up about that Snowden leaked another bit of information.
I think he leaked it all at once, and then now the news media that have the compendium of all of his leaks are leaking bits more.
They suggested I don't know. At any rate, the thing is that the government could, the CIA or the NSA could pretend to be Facebook.
Right.
But it never was targeted at the mass. It was just targeted at people who were legitimate intelligence overseas
targets. Right.
And it was the whole thing was marked top secret, so immediately everybody published it.
Right. Of course, because it's been leaked, so now let's publish it.
I don't get it. So we have just told somebody who wants to attack the United States or is a foreign intelligence official or something like that, something that's top secret that our government does to figure out what they're going to do to attack the United States, and we are incensed
that it was done.
That we are spying on those poor people who are outside non-American citizens who want to attack the United States.
Right. I have to say this. If you're posting something on Facebook,
and you expect it to be private?
It's not private. It's not private. I don't care what privacy settings you have. All you have to have is one friend that decides to share whatever you posted, and it goes to everybody.
And the other, you know, theoretically, it put something in the computer where they could get the information. You know what this what it boiled down to is they've said there are viruses out there, and the government may be using one.
I think that's quite likely. But again, there's a whole subject here that people have completely missed, which is the government knows
everything.
Every dollar we make. I think that that is the problem. I think that if a much bigger problem, I think that if we have, you know, people hear us, I get compliments about when we talk about the efficiencies that need to be placed in the economy and about making things run smoothly. Our tax code is one of the biggest friction points on our economy. We need to pay taxes. Don't get me wrong there.
You and I agree on that one.
But one of the things, a very easy rule that I use to tell when an industry or a sector or an asset class is in a bubble, is I look and I see how many really, really, really well-educated people but getting paid lots and lots of money are doing something that doesn't create any value. That defines the tax code right there. We have huge industry doing something that's not intended to ever create value.
We have a caller on 773-1400. By the way, the other telephone number that's available here is
1-866-597-1400.
So caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I apologize. This may be a little off the topic that you were on.
We're already off of the topic that we're on.
We're most often off topic.
Yes.
Yes.
There's a gentleman, I forget his first name. His last name is Stansberry. And he seems to be saying that legislation that will go into effect in July is going to precipitate a fall from the dollar being the world currency. And I know y'all talked about that before, but could you address that again, please?
Do you have any idea what legislation he's talking about?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I'll just up front tell you, don't worry about it. No legislation that could possibly pass Congress and be signed by the president could do that to the dollar. It's just
not
possible.
Not right now. This is...
Well, he said it'll precipitate it. It won't actually cause it to happen, but
no,
the reaction to that legislation will...
All right, let's go back and let's look at the main pieces here. And a lot of times people will put forth a scenario and they say the scenario will cause something, and they put a lot of details into the scenario and they miss the big picture completely. Currency in the world, all currency in the world, there are more dollars in the world than there are all other currencies put together. That's why it's the world currency, because it's how, if there was another currency that were to somehow take its place, they would have to make so much of that currency that it would inflate itself so that it could replace what the dollar is already. I mean, just thinking about, if you think of a dollar as a barter, like a chicken. If you've got currency and it's a chicken, you're paying a chicken for some bacon. If you've got a lot of chickens, then those chickens have to be worth something or nobody wants the chickens. Do you follow what I'm saying so far?
Yeah.
Okay. If you have too many chickens and nobody likes to eat chickens, chickens aren't going to be currency. Dollars are backed by the United States government's obligation and taxes and our GDP, which right now and has been since World War II, the strongest that exists anywhere. The reason why the dollar has been the world currency isn't because of some legislation that we've passed and said we will become the world's currency. Or that's kind of silliness. It's because we have enough dollars. And the other governments of the world know that our government isn't going to do something really, really stupid consecutively to mess up our currency. One of the major tenets of the American dream is ownership. That is not true in other countries. If our whole system is based in the value of ownership, and we have a government that defrays that value somehow, that lowers the value of ownership, and we can point at the government and say they did it, that government's not going to be there very long. That's how we get turnovers in our government. So our whole monetary system is based on the fact that the citizens of the United States own the United States. If you look at other... Go ahead.
I'm in the terrible position of having to try to advocate his position, which I really don't agree in, but just to give the devil his due.
What happened to
British pound sterling? Why did it no longer become the currency?
Okay,
the world currency?
This is a great, simple, very easy answer. This is a great reason why we shouldn't go on the gold standard. Because have you ever heard of sterling silver? Okay. Sterling silver is from Sterling, England. Sterling, England decided that a purity of silver, they put the standard on the purity of silver, and they measured it out in weight. They did it in ounces, and they did it in pounds. Wow. That's where the word pound comes from in the English currency. So the British pound, the English pound, was based on silver. And there's not enough silver, which is, again, what we were talking about a moment ago. There's not enough silver for it to be used as the currency of the world. Second to that, if someone discovers a lot of silver, all of the currency in the world becomes inflated. It becomes worth less than it was. So if you have a contract with an employer to be paid in silver, and suddenly the silver doesn't buy a lot of what it used to buy, then your contract, which you have to stick with, or you've got legal liabilities, is going to be not what you agreed to begin with. So anytime you have a commodity as the base, the currency is going to be limited by that commodity.
I found your act. that you're talking about. It's the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. Does that sound familiar with you?
Uh-huh.
Listen, caller?
Maybe.
Okay, well, that's the one that goes in effect on July 1st, 2014.
And I'm going to drop off.
Okay, all right. Thanks for the call.
And the what it really boils down to is the argument is made in an article called Dollar Vigilante that you really should transfer all your assets offshore right now, immediately, so as to avoid paying income taxes.
Please don't think that we're saying that.
No, this is the argument in the article by the guy who, by the way, is in the business of providing offshore tax shelters, which means that he probably will get the all-expense-paid vacation to Fort Leavenworth one of these days.
It's a gated community.
Yes.
All the best people are there.
The Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, it basically says that if American citizens have deposits in a bank outside of the United States above a certain minimum amount, which is a bunch, I don't remember what it is, but a significant quantity of money, if you decide that you want to transfer $5 million to the Bahamas and hide it so that you can invest it and not pay income taxes in the United States, or you can hide it from the IRS or whatever you want to do, what it boils down to is this act says that the bank in the Bahamas has got to report that to the IRS, that it's there, just like banks in the United States have to report that it's there. And if you then say that you got no, they have to basically, the banks in the Bahamas or Switzerland or wherever have to send you the equivalent or their local, it's a international equivalent of a 1099 to say you earned this much interest, and they have to report to the Internal Revenue Service that you earned this much interest. That might cause the dollar to become something other than the world preferred currency is a little surprising. Although he says that. He said that the all the other currencies in the world will promptly overwhelm the dollar because people in the United States will no longer be able to use dollar-based tax shelter positions in foreign countries, which is, excuse me, extremely silly. What it really, the guy is Jeff Berwick.
Well, the guy that Stansberry guy, I just looked him up. It's HR, the bill that is slightly different from the one.
Okay.
The caller was just asking about Stansberry. H.R. 2847,
right,
which is the Restore Employment Act, along with Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act.
That
which
was
is
the
what you were talking
yeah.
about. It's a myth. The whole concept of it. Now, I'm not at all an advocate for either of these two bills. So please hear that first. I think both of those are really stupid bills. I really, really dislike them. There's a lot of other problems that I can talk about with them, but this side of it is stupid. There are a lot of people out there that see this and they say this is going to cause the dollar to collapse as the world currency, because if you're transferring money around, banks aren't going to want to hold dollars if they're not an American bank. And so they're going to exclude Americans, and therefore they're not going to deal in dollars. It's a stretch, to say the least. I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail in it, except that if you just go back to the common sense aspect of there's no other currency that has enough individual parts to it to replace the dollar at any point in the next decade. If somebody starts a new one, it has to be backed with value before it can, and then have enough of it that it can replace this huge amount
right.
of currency.
The point I wanted to make in this is if you go to the end of one of these articles, and they're generally long, very long articles, but you go to the end, and the one I'm looking at right here referring to that act, who also jumps on these same claims, states that our clients are high net worth and are used to the finer things in life, so we've chosen a beautiful 5-star resort to have our conference. And it says down here, click here to secure your assets for yourself and your family. Basically, what the guy is saying, the government is going to wreck the dollar. It's going to wreck the world. So turn all your assets over to me, and I will prevent them from being wrecked by the government. And, of course, the issue is, in this particular case, I would immediately say, of course not. They won't be your assets anymore. He will have them, and you will be broke, so you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Right.
Anytime that somebody tries to get you to do something with your money out of fear of the government or fear of something, and I'm going to tell you this, without exception, they're trying to relieve you of the responsibility for having that money by putting it in their pockets walking away.
I'm going to give the actual behavioral economic side of why that fear is so difficult to ignore. This is an easy one. If you have a basket full of strawberries, do you like strawberries?
I could take them or leave
them. Okay, what's your favorite fruit?
My favorite
favorite berry.
Blueberries, I think.
Okay, blueberries.
I have a basket full of blueberries.
You're looking
at
the blueberries.
And those are both B words, so that
works.
Yes,
and you're looking at it, and you're saying, this is going to be so great.
A basket.
Well, a small basket.
A small basket of blueberries. Right.
All right, you're all excited about the blueberries.
I've got a pint of blueberries.
And you look at the blueberries, right. And you start to reach in, and you pick up the first blueberry, and a cockroach comes running out from underneath it.
Uh-huh.
Are you excited about the blueberries anymore?
Yes.
But you still want to eat the blueberries?
I would wash them first.
Okay.
But I would have washed them anyway.
The disgust that we felt, that all the listeners felt, at the concept of a cockroach in the blueberries.
Mm-hmm.
Let's reverse that and say you have a basket full of cockroaches, a small basket full of cockroaches, and there's a blueberry in it. Okay, you made big eyes there. You had big eyes.
I'm trying to imagine a basket. First, imagining a basket full of cockroaches.
Yeah, it's a disgusting image.
They must be dead cockroaches or they wouldn't stay in the basket.
The reason why I'm doing this is because the concept of disgust is far, far more powerful
than
the concept of pleasure.
Yes.
So if we're disgusted with the government, all it takes is a little statement, one cockroach in the blueberries, to cause a disgust reaction to say the blueberries are all bad. Where you can't flip it around the other way and say, oh, well, look at that basket full of cockroaches. It's got a blueberry in it.
And so I want to eat the cockroaches?
No, you don't want to do it. See, you never are going to want to eat the cockroaches. See, that's the thing about, well, you will never. There are places where cockroaches are the cuisine. I mean,
actually, I have. Because of my former occupation.
Yes, if you're out in a place and you're hungry enough, the cockroaches might be part of the cuisine.
I have eaten chocolate-covered insects, yes.
Okay, so I think you understand where I'm going with this.
I do, yes.
That the concept of the dollar, which is, it's got its warts and pimples, but if all we look at are the warts and pimples, that's all we're going to see. If we don't take a moment and look at the other currencies out there, we have to say, all right, what if the dollar is going to be destroyed, it has to be replaced by something.
And you said chickens.
Chickens. We should use chickens, except that chickens die. You can't put them in the bank vault and expect them to still be there a month later.
Right.
That's a problem with chickens.
Yes.
So this whole concept of what the currency is going to be destroyed, rather than concentrating on that aspect, you have to say if it's destroyed, it has to be replaced. Otherwise, there isn't a world trade anymore. So that's the question you should ask. What replaces it? And there's nothing to replace it.
If the only thing that could destroy the dollar at this point, and I'm going to answer the question that you raised about the pound sterling too. First off, I want to say something. The pound sterling was never the world reserve currency per se. It may have been even the largest currency in circulation in the world in terms of volume. But that was because it was during a time period when Great Britain effectively circled the globe. All the colonies of Great Britain were effectively Great Britain.
And then the Spanish money was still more highly in circulation than the sterling.
I'm talking about in the late 19th century, in the early 20th century, before the British Empire began to fall. You know, India, between the Commonwealth and the British Empire, it constituted the largest, at that point, the largest set of people and the largest economy by far in the world.
Yeah.
And the currency that was used in that economy, by definition, is going to be the one that has the highest level of circulation. And it was backed by something that was considered to be quite stable at the time, which is the literally the pound sterling. It represented a pound of silver. It was illegal to transact large quantities of silver. A lot of things went into that, but the biggest single thing is that we didn't have a global economy. We had national economies. At that point, we didn't have a gross domestic product. We had a gross national product because we really were trying to ignore that the rest of the world existed.
Yeah, we were completely concentrated on how do we be self-sufficient completely. It's
and
like being one state, Texas, being self-sufficient from the rest. It's
in the natural,
not going to happen.
In the natural, for lack of better terms, institutional development of socioeconomic systems, and I'm getting a little bit academic here, but that's all right. Bear with me. The one system is eventually going to dominate, and during the last half of the 20th century, there was an extreme competition between two systems, and in retrospect, we look back and say that one of them was sure to fail, but and it did. There was a Russo-Soviet system that was in competition with a Western European system based post-World War II in the United States. I say Western European. It basically was an Anglo-European system, Anglo-U.S. European system. One of those systems won, and one national entity by its economy dominates the world today. And everything else functions in reference to that. And the reason it dominates the world is because it has the most stable government and the most stable economy on the planet. Now,
the reason why it's the most stable government, by the way, is because it's got programmed in a lot of instability.
Right.
Every 2 years, it can be completely destabilized to something else.
And
that's why it's most stable.
Yeah, and you really confuse the issue, but
it's true.
What he's saying is absolutely true. We have controlled chaos. We have a certain level of chaos built into our system that keeps it from collapsing. As a result, we have created the most dependable currency on the planet. We're also the biggest international trader on the planet, so it's in our best interest to continue to maintain that currency as stable. This is all working together very, very nicely. Now, we can do as people do in the United States, because one of our strengths is our freedom, is freedom of the press, freedom of speech. We can attack our own currency.
Yep, we are the ones that attack it the most.
And the people there's two groups of people who attack the United States and the United States currency. And I'm probably going to offend somebody here. Try to think about this before you get too offended. Enemies of the United States attack the United States verbally and say how bad we are. Turn on talk radio during the week and listen to the United States being attacked for how bad we are.
Yeah.
I know that sounds absurd, but just listen for a few minutes to what, and I have, Al Jazeera has an English version, which is really, really good stuff. But then they very clearly state, you know, we're going to state the opinion here of this press release from Al-Qaeda or whoever. They don't claim that it's true. They just say, here's what they said. Well, our news reports it too, but they report it more often. So listening to what they're saying, and then, hate to break this to you, turn to conservative talk radio during the week and listen to the stories there. They're reporting and talking about the same things and their negatives concerning the United States government. Now, are either of them the total truth? No. They're talking about very, very, very small things, amplifying them up because they don't like the current state of the United States government.
Well, and there are reasons for that. Internally, when we talk about making things better, we talk about what's wrong with something. It's constructive in that hopefully we have an alternative.
Right.
And well, the external people are attacking and
they just
don't like
it.
They just want to destroy us. There are aspects of what you said that I totally concur with, but when we are looking at the dollar and internally we're trying to destroy well, in cases of Glenn Beck, it's been pretty well established. He was hoping that the dollar would be destroyed. He was being paid in large amounts of gold by gold companies talk about how bad the dollar was
about
going
how
to
the,
be.
He was trying to talk the United States economy into a collapse so he could become wealthy.
And this is established. You can look this up. Google is your friend here, and you can look at well-established court documents for this one. The manipulation there was clear. And he's admitted it. He's apologized for it. We can go forward. But it's still a scenario that when we're talking about the collapse of our currency, if somebody's talking about the collapse of the dollar, first you should what I was saying earlier, look to see what is possible out there to replace it. And if there's not enough of it out there, it can't replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And second, look who's saying it and where they're making their money.
Right. The Russians and Iranians have tried to collapse the dollar on many occasions.
And they would really love the dollar to be collapsed.
And I had to put this way, but go back and check it out. Don't just get mad at me. Glenn Beck, the Russians, and the Iranians all wanted the dollar to collapse at the same time.
For the same reason.
And all three of them unaware of the fact that they would destroy themselves by doing
right.
so.
Iran, Russia, and Glenn Beck were both investing heavily in gold and hoping for the dollar to go away.
Yes. So... but we've got to play some commercials to try to keep the dollar strong.
Yes.
That's what we do. That
no, it's not.
Yeah, because if we have commercials, then people are paying the radio station, and that causes money to circulate greater strength in the economy. And
that's why they play the commercial. We play it because if we don't play the commercial,
it keeps the station on the air.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. We'll be back after these words from KTEM sponsors. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. We're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I have to say it. I have to do it.
Uh-oh.
I hate it when people talk about collective experience, when they say, our firm collectively has over 100 years of experience.
Are you going to talk about the commercials again?
I am. I'm going to do it.
I want to know how this firm has 45 years of experience. Well, it didn't say collective. It has over 45 years experience.
Really, if you think you have 100 people in the firm that have all been working there a year, you've got 100 years of collective experience.
When I didn't say collective experience.
No, they didn't. They said our firm has experience. Well, the firm...
has 45 years of experience.
I don't know. It might be a great place. I'm not knocking that. I have trouble with that kind of...
That's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, they have 45 employees and...
All of them have been there a year.
Given that they're advertising nationally, they probably have 90 employees and they've been in a business six months.
Right. Collectively, we have 45 years of experience. You should watch our time clock as it rolls forward at years at a day.
And yeah, we work with this kind of stuff all the time. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number's near. We already told you. Let's see. Yeah, let's talk about what happened during the week to the Mark Stockett.
Sounds good to me.
And the stock market is the KCB. The Trader in Barron's today has a wonderful headline describing it. NASDAQ dives as investors bolt for value stocks.
Diving? Bolting? And
bolting. They are bolting. Investors are bolting while the NASDAQ dives. You got to think about that for a while. That's, you know, the images that come to mind there are just... But the topic line, the line in the article says, stocks finished generally to the upside last week. Wait a minute. What happened to NASDAQ dives as investors bolt? however, there were certain pharmaceutical and tech stocks, such as Netflix. That's a tech stock? Tesla Motors. Anyway, that plunged. So, you know, stock,
first let me hit.
Not much happened, but there was a lot of bolting, plunging,
yes,
and diving.
And anytime you use a word that is also its own opposite, I get a little worried about that. So,
I do.
Yeah, it's called an auto antonym, by the way.
Ooh.
So the word bolt, you can bolt a door to
right.
keep it from moving.
Right.
Or you can bolt
to run out of the room.
To run out of the room.
But you can't bolt if it's bolted.
Right. It's like making something fast is to make it not move.
But you have to be careful that your door bolt is different from your lightning bolt.
Yes, and you don't want to use a lightning bolt to bolt your door or to bolt out of the room.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, if the lightning bolt hit the room, would cause you to bolt out of the room.
All of the people that listen to us for any length of time know that we make fun of these headlines because they use words that don't mean anything in the market to mean something in the market.
Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 0.55%. Actually, what it is, this is an interesting thing. The less there is to say of any substance about what happened in the stock market during a week, my experience has been the more absurdly bold the headlines get.
You have to. I mean, how else are you going to sell a newspaper or sell a subscription? You got to get people reading things, so you got to use the best. So what would you say,
0.55% rise in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, a 0.0% for the week, a 0.40% rise in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, which plunged, dropped 0.67% for the week.
Well, that's quite a plunge. If you think about a straight road, and you dropped
0.67% over a week while you're driving.
Yes. That may be something that you wouldn't notice, but this is why we need headlines to tell us about it.
Yeah, you might not even notice that your road was dropped that far. Now
it plunged 0.67%.
Actually, what happened in reality is even as late as Friday, the S&P 500 once again broke an interday, it's called, not the close, an interday high, all-time high. And they got so tired of writing S&P 500 breaks
new record
for high levels. They had to have the NASDAQ plunging, and they had to have investors bolting for value stocks.
Well, there's good news here. And the good news is that the fact that they are still using headlines that are inflammatory and scary when it comes to the market means that I'm happy. If they ever start saying, as expected, the S&P 500 went up, then I'm going to say, all right, we need to get out of stocks.
Well, actually, what is actually happening in the market makes a great deal of what happened last week is the market had a spasm of rationality. And that's always quite frightening to people who monitor the stock market because they'd be out of jobs if the stock market became totally rational and just did what a rational, logical person should do. What happened was people looked at Tesla, Facebook, Google.
And they've got a new title for those.
What are they called?
They're called the NASDAQ Momentum Stocks.
The Mo Stocks, yeah.
And I think it's hilarious because that's another word, momentum. Momentum, we know what that means. If there is a dump truck heading down the street at you, you need to get out of the way because their brakes will not be able to stop them at a short distance. Momentum stocks don't follow those rules.
Well, what happened is the stocks that ran up so much last year, without any earnings to show for it, just simply, these are the future, therefore we should buy more of them, even if they're ridiculously priced. For some reason or another, during the last week, at least some investors looked around and said, whoa, wait a minute. There ain't no way in the world that Google or Tesla is going to make that much money anytime in the foreseeable future. And they turned around and bought stocks that actually are highly profitable. And I know that it sounds very, very boring at this point in our history to say that they bought Microsoft and Intel, which used to be the high-tech speculative stocks of the 1990s. Now they are kind of the industrial stocks of the United States. One of them makes software and the other one makes the hardware, and lots of stuff runs on both of them. And they both have solid profits and pay dividends and do old stodgy stuff that we, those of us who thought the 1990s are still modern, would have never dreamed that they would do. They went up. People actually looked out there, and I don't understand why this spasm of rationality hit the market, but it did. And people looked around and said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Microsoft has been beat up. But look at their profits. Look at their dividends. Look at their cash reserves. Wow. that's an undervalued stock. We ought to buy some of that. Meanwhile, exactly when will Tesla become profitable?
Well, see, that's...
Well, we really don't have a forecast for that.
I have a great deal of admiration for Elon Musk, but I also have a great deal of disadmiration for Elon Musk. He has created something that is making a profit right now, but that he has admitted, and many other people that know have admitted, long-term has no viability.
Mm-hmm.
Unless technology changes completely, the electric car cannot work. It's worse than planned obsolescence of General Motors and Ford during the 1970s. The batteries in those cars cost almost as much as the car and have to be replaced after 3.5 years.
I'm going to agree with Rush Limbaugh on something here.
What's that?
He has a lot of comment about Tesla that there's no way in the world Tesla could be profitable without government subsidies.
Correct.
And
absolutely correct. Which is part of the reason why I respect Elon Musk so much, who's their CEO and founder.
Yeah, he's
figured out a way to make something that is not profitable, profitable. Brilliant.
You're right, by capitalizing on silly subsidies.
Yeah, I mean, the government's going to give him stuff to do it. Might as well do it. We talk about this at other points. We talk about how until technology is not subsidized, we don't get a boost in it. If we're trying to replace oil by putting a lot of money into an inefficient system, we're going to keep using that inefficient system because it's profitable to do so, even though it's inefficient because there's extra money coming to it.
And I'm going to tell you that I hate to I hate to get into this, but I just want to say that so far, if you really want to see something that doesn't work, look at whatever the government decides to invest in because they think it's a good business idea.
Right. If we flip it around and we say, how is it that fracking, which is a new technology, came about? It wasn't because the government said, I'm going to give the oil companies a lot of money so that they can figure out how to be more efficient in oil.
Right.
It's because the cost of oil got high enough that they could spend some money in research to find a better way of getting it.
And the reason that we are profitable and able to do that in the oil world today is because the government has not artificially held the price of oil down.
Correct.
Like other countries have, nor, for better or worse, have we decided to put a tax on gasoline that's as high as the underlying value of the gasoline itself.
Right. So Britain did that. Russia, on the other hand, they produce all this gas. They subsidize their gas so that the people of Russia don't have any problem buying the gas. It's mostly given to them. So when you flip around and you say, all right, what is it that caused oil companies in the United States to do this thing where gas companies in Russia have not done it and they are so dependent, Russia is so dependent on gas, why haven't they done the same technology shift that we did? Why are they waiting for their own collapse?
Well, because they've kept the prices. Well, the other
where
thing
are.
Is, there's a little problem that if you become too profitable in the Soviet Russia Union Federation,
whatever it is now,
they will basically come in and say, "Oh, that's a very profitable company. It's illegal. We'll just take it from you."
I'm going to take it from you and give it to a childhood friend of mine who's
right.
not quite yet a billionaire.
Got
he
it.
Is now.
Yes, but he's loyal.
Very loyal to me, and he knows.
We're unfortunately about out of time for this first hour, and I have some other, I think, interesting news for next hour, so you're certainly welcome to come back. We actually are showing some signs of crawling out of the long recession we've been in. I know it technically was over in 2009, but not by the way I measure it. And we'll be back next hour with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to contact us off the air with any comments or thoughts or advice on investments or things like that, you can reach us locally. We have a voicemail over the weekend and live people answering the phone during the week at 947-1111. Or
you can also reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage. We've got podcasts waiting there. You can contact us through the Contact Us section at thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. And you can also read about us and see pictures of our bald heads, which is important.
I think so. I mean,
it's how you
no,
keep
you
us
can't
apart.
See mine. I'm wearing a hat.
It's true.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Till next hour.
KTM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.